Wanna go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 117 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Another wacky Wednesday. I got to double check. Is it actually episode 117? It is. All right. Man, these Wednesdays come fast. I was just seemed like I was just trying to line up another a guest beforehand. For long-time listeners, you can, do something else. But for the new listeners, around here, every Wednesday is an interview day. And then every Sunday is a rant episode, daily Sunday shit show, whatever you want to call it. You know, I'll talk about, whatever happens to be topical in the world of hockey. Or, if I find an article. This past Sunday, a listener had sent me an article from Sportster. Some website, I can't remember. It was for a few years old. But the article was the 15 worst enforcers of all time. And, that was quite a list. So please go back and check out that episode 116 for that list. Guys, once again, it's Tuesday night, and I'm going to be talking to my guest tonight. I'm recording this Tuesday after work. You're listening to it on Wednesday, obviously. Time warp. But I am talking to my guest tonight, Dan Kopeck. Dangerous Dan Kopeck. He was, and we are doing another one of the five toughest opponents segments. Returning guest Dan Kopeck, I should say. He was episode 14. If you want to go back and listen to the full-length episode I did with Dan, where we timelined his entire career. And Dan was a great guest, told some great stories. Really looking forward to hearing about his five toughest opponents. And, Dan played in the Western Hockey League with the Brandon Wheat Kings. Brandon Wheat Kings with the Spokane Chiefs. Played a year at the Weyburn Red Wings in the SJHL. Then he played college for a couple years. And then he turned pro and played in the East Coast League. And then wrapped up his career with one final year in the crazy Quebec Senior Hockey League, the LNAH, with the infamous Laval Chiefs. And he told some great stories about playing in Laval. And I'm sure he'll tell some more tonight when I talk to him. I'm sure out of his five toughest opponents, a couple of those fights will be from the Quebec League, I would imagine. But, again, I'm kind of putting the cart before the horse here. But other than that, like I said, proud member of the Hockey Podcast Network. There's over 50 shows in the network. So whatever team, all the NHL teams are represented. So whatever team you're a fan of, there's a show for you. Of course, the Knights, Islanders, Habs, and Tampa Bay, those guys, their shows are obviously be humming along and spitting out content as the teams play on here. Definitely whatever. And like I said, the network has really tried to branch off with a number of things. There's a Life After Hockey show. There's myself and Terry Ryan, of course, with the original content. Mental health shows. Like I said, the network's trying to cover all, like not just the NHL teams, obviously, but branch out as well. So definitely bounce around the network, see what's out there. Also, for my off-network friends, of course, Jolton Joe Lazito over the Coliseum Chronicles. He is an Islander Enforcer podcast. And Joe's done some great work. With Mick Fakoda, Aaron Asham, Eric Bolton, on and on. Although he's kind of branched off, he's doing something a little different. Because I guess there's only so many Islander guys you can talk to. But his latest episode is with Kevin Kaminsky, who of course never played for the Islanders, but certainly played with guys that went on to be Islanders and fought guys that were, you know, in the system, sticking with the Islander theme, of course. And it's not about Kevin's career. It's about his thoughts on those guys and that type of thing. And Kevin's always been a great guest. I talked to him the other day about getting him on the show here, and you know, we'll go over his whole career, and you know, he had a great career, and it would be cool to talk about the old 80s Saskatoon Blades and stuff, of course. And I'm really looking forward to that. And he's agreed to come on the show. We just got to set up a time. So I have a number of guests. I've got some really cool guests on deck here that are coming. And I know a couple of them have never done podcasts before. So it'll be, and I know they're really excited to do it. I mean, I've had guys, oh yeah, sure thing, bro. And then you never hear from them again or whatever. But, these two in particular have taken a real active role in the interview, in terms of just like with questions and really on the ball with, you know, I've mentioned some, oh yeah, and talk about that and whatever. And they bring up different story, ask me about this. And so, I mean, they're really into it, and it's just, you know, coming up with a time. And, of course, like I said, regular listeners will know work has been busy for me. This picks up June, July, and August are kind of my busy months. And of course, we're also trying to sell our condo, so we've been in a bit of a time warp here, and all my vehicle issues and blah, blah, blah. There's always, seems to be something going on every night after work. I got to go do something. So my schedule has been a little bit up in the air. And, you know, when you're trying to plan with someone else and you have time differences and they're in Ontario, so they're 2 hours ahead and whatever. And, of course, they got a life, and on the weekends they go out camping and fishing and whatever. So you're kind of, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, it'll definitely happen. I'm not going anywhere. Hopefully you listeners aren't going anywhere. So I will certainly, at some point, the interview will come out. And like I said, an actual part of me, I really don't want some, I think the interview sort of, I shouldn't say that, because Dakota Odger's interview did really well. It was really well received, and you know, I think it was like 50th in Canada for a couple of days there, which was cool. The support was really great on that, and the feedback was all really positive. So I was going to say, I think with the playoffs and everything going on, I'm thinking player interviews are kind of really getting lost in the shuffle. But now that there's only a couple games, maybe not, I could be wrong. Like I said, I guess Dakota's interview, the reception was quite well. They did quite well, so, you know, maybe I'm talking out my ass. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to sitting down and talking to those guys. I got all my questions laid out, so they're going to be really in-depth, and you know how we do it around here. So I'm really looking forward to bringing that to you guys. But, yeah, but... what was I saying? Oh, yeah, and Joe's Kevin Kaminsky interview. I'm about halfway through it. It's been really cool to listen. Like I said, Joe does a great job. He's been around. Joe's done this for a long time. And, you know, hold on. Talk amongst yourselves. Keep talking. I'm going over here. It's like 32 out today, so I got to turn the fan on here in the back room, the oscillating fan. So if you hear that, that's just, yeah. Anyway, yeah, no, Joe's been around, and like I said, he was, for those that remember the Tough Guy magazines that used to come out once a year, that us old fight fans, before the internet and the Google machine, we craved those hockey fight magazines, and he was a big contributor to those, as well as the Stan Fischler Bad Boys books. Yeah, Joe really, really did a lot of work on those as well. How many of those were there? Four? Three or four? I used to be able to turn around and look at my bookshelf because they were all right there, but everything's packed up. I'm pretty much sitting in a hollow room. You could probably hear the echo, actually. But, yeah, so he's Joe's been around because, like I said, Joe's fucking old. So, you know. But Joe, he'll probably be wearing black and not talking to anybody after that. What was it? 8-0 shellacking that his Islanders took last. That was embarrassing, Joe. Come on, what are we doing here? I don't know. Joe's probably out on the street corner yelling about Josh Bailey and Brock Nelson in his number one Wang jersey. That's an inside joke. Nobody will get that but Joe and I. But Joe and I have been, we were talking private messages today, like a couple little schoolgirls passing notes. Yeah, laughing at all you fucking schmucks. But no, Joe's a good dude. Known Joe a long time. And definitely, in all seriousness, check out his show. His back catalog is tremendous. Yeah, follow him on social media, send him a note. Joe's a good dude. He'll get back to you right away. definitely. Jolton Joel Lozito, give me the Lozito. So, but also, I'm not even going to five for five. I'm not talking about that Mud Show. Till he keeps saying he's coming back, but I know he's down there with his feet up, drinking his white claws down by the pool at the new complex there in Fort Myer. Tough life. Yeah, I'm not even going to talk about that guy. But other than that, friend Dave over at the Slewfoot Show, and Dan, Paul, and Kelly at the Obey the Puck Show. They are a couple current shows that talk all things hockey and whatever happens to be topical at the moment, whether it be in the minors, women's hockey, junior hockey, road hockey, I don't know, ball hockey, roller hockey. Remember the RHI? Completely off topic. What was I doing the other night? And I came across some RHI. It was on YouTube. I came across an RHI video, and I was watching the game there for a while. What a scene. Actually, there were some tough dudes that played in that league. And was it the RHI? There was another one. I think it was like MLH, Major League, MLRH, Major League Roller Hockey. Was that what it was? There was that league, and then there was RHI. But, oh, yeah, there was some, like Chad Wagner and Langdon, and those guys played in that league. Lakovic played for the Vancouver Voodoo. There was some tilts, too. I remember I had a Darren Langdon roller hockey fight on some fight video somewhere. I need to dig that up if I do. But speaking of fight videos, if you are so inclined to watch such things, hit up the YouTubes and check out Fourth Line Voice on YouTube. I have over 2,500 fight videos on my channel, from junior to pro, all the leagues. I got everything sorted, so go to the little search thing, boom, 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 whatever league you're looking for, it'll all come up. And, yeah, like I said, there's something for everybody, from junior A, hell, junior B, all the way to the minors, to the NHL. There's always something. I haven't been putting stuff up as much as I would like to lately, just due to, like, time. Plus, I really don't have any fight DVDs here. Like I said, everything's sort of packed away and sitting in a Quonset, so waiting to move. So, although I do have a few DVDs around here, but I need to get on that. Maybe this weekend I'll put some stuff up. But definitely check that out. Subscribe to the channel. Also, if you happen to be on social media, why? But if you want to punish yourself and be on social media, I'm going to talk about that in a second. But follow me on Twitter and at Fourth Line Voice, of course, on Twitter, as well as on Facebook. Also, join the Enforcer Appreciation Group, or the Fights, Hits, and Brawls group, and share pictures and videos and what have you on there with fellow fight fans, although I question if some of them are actually fight fans with the shit they post. But it can seem to be a lot of crying. But I'm going to get into all that on Sunday. I'm not going to start ranting and raving on Wednesdays. This is Dan's episode, so I'm not going to do that. But the one thing I will bring up, I'm not going to mention their names because it came up today. One of the topics that I've seen on social media, despite everyone crying about the bad reffing, and even I was out at the farm on Sunday, so I watched the debacle, the Montreal-Vegas game. Everybody goes on and on about the ref. Yeah, there was, I think there was 8 people in the room watching the game. I think, literally, I'm not lying. This isn't just hyperbole. I'm not just saying this. 5 of them were nodding off. That's how exciting the product is. Yeah, and you think the reffing is the problem. That was the only exciting part, was what the refs were letting go. But yeah, I will admit that was a poorly ref game. Now, do I think it was because the league wants Las Vegas to win the cup? No, that is just idiocy. But apparently this, of course, conspiracy theory is going around social media. And I saw it at a bunch of places. I was just like, oh, God. So I went on my Facebook page, on my own page, and I just asked, because I have about 1,000 friends, followers, whatever they call it on Facebook, friends, I guess. I said, okay, I see this, everybody saying Vegas, they want Vegas to, Bettman wants Vegas to win the cup, why? And of course, I got a bunch of people replying, oh, it's money and all this and all that, and nobody was really making much. I mean, they had their little argument, but none of it made any sense, really. But okay, but we were going back and forth, no problem. And then a couple other guys got in there, and then they start arguing amongst themselves. And then, of course, like a bunch of children, then the homophobic slurs got to start getting thrown, the gay bashing and everything, calling each other names. And it's like, really? Grown adults? Like, what are we doing? So I booted them off of my page. I erased the thread. Thank you, you two, once again, for being adults. Yeah, can't even have a conversation or just a, heaven forbid someone has a different opinion. Like, I had a different opinion than all the people that commented, but we weren't yelling and gay bashing. Like, really? Like, these are grown, well, apparently supposed to be grown adults. Like, so you two, if you happen to be listening to this show, you can take your shit elsewhere. I don't appreciate that on my page. I don't want to read that, and I don't want to see it. You can go on your page and say all the shit you want, whatever. I'm not telling you what you can and can't say, but you're not saying it on my page. Beat it. I don't want any part of it. And grow up. So, there. That is that. But, yeah. So that was a little... Not sadly, not surprising in the least, but just head shaking that it's a grown adult, little like fanboys that can't contain themselves. It's embarrassing. But whatever. Such is social media. But anyway, enough of this. Let's get on to my talk with Dan Kopeck. And like I said, if you want to go back, please check out my back catalog. And it's episode 14 with Dan. And he was a great guest. So great having him back. And like I said, I've said this a number of times. I'm really enjoying, I always enjoy having the guys back anyway. But I kind of really dig this, the five toughest opponents. It's, you know, they're kind of quick, you know, whatever, in and out. And but, you know, get a funny little blurb on each guy. And it's cool just to reconnect with the guys. So I'm enjoying doing these. I'm going to continue to do them. But it was asked, are you going to go back to doing some full-length interviews and blah, blah. Yes, I certainly will. I'm not going to just abandon that and just do this. But, no, I will certainly do some full-length interviews. Time is tough right now. And I don't want to say this is last ditch or anything like that. I don't mean it like that. But this is just I want to bring you guys content, and I enjoy doing this, and it's cool to catch up, so it all works out. So, but at any rate, let's get on with things. Here's my conversation with Dan Kopeck about his five toughest opponents. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday. Thanks, everybody. All right, here we are on the Fourth Line Voice, returning guest. Another one of the five toughest opponent segments that I've been doing lately. And this gentleman I've had on, he was episode 14. If I encourage you all to go back and check out his back interview. But on the phone, I have Dan Kopeck. Dan, how are you doing today?
Good. Real good.
Excellent.
Glad to be back.
Well, right on. Yeah, like I said, episode 14, and we timelined your entire career. You know, we started in Brandon and went through Spokane and Weyburn and then on to pro, and of course wrapping it up in the crazy Quebec League with the Laval Chiefs. And actually, it was funny. I was watching that DVD the other night to catch up on this, and crazy times, man. Just before we get into your five toughest opponents and all that, just, I don't know, we talked about it in your first interview and all that, but just for the new listeners, when you first signed on with Laval and got down there, were you aware of what you were actually getting into?
I don't know if I don't think anybody's who comes into that league for the first time is probably 100% aware of what they're getting into. I mean, I actually, you know what, I really didn't do very much background check into what it was when we got there. I went down there in the summertime. They actually flew me in the summer. I'm not sure if I even talked about that in the first time we talked, but they brought me down in the summer to have a look around, eh? So I got to know who was there, kind of, but I really didn't know who the other teams were and what they had on their rosters or whatever, but I kind of knew what Laval had, so... And I know they were trying to get Rezanzov too to come down at the same time as me. So we were both talking back and forth, and you know he ended up going there first before I got there because I didn't get to kill a few games into the season. So he kind of gave me a heads up too once he got there. But no, I don't think anybody's really quite ready for that when they step out there. I mean, being a fighter or whatever, being used to it, that part of it probably wasn't, you know, much of a shocker. But yeah, it's a little bit different. I think it's just more the way the fans treat it and the way the owner is and the, you know, how it's encouraged, and that's what their big selling part of their team is or whatever, especially in Laval. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a shocker. But after a couple games and you see who you got with you on your team, too, it's kind of a little bit made a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, well, like you said, like your the Laval team was pretty crazy. Like they were always crazy, but that year, I mean, like I said, you got Rez there with you, and the Matthew Rabbi and Jolly and DeGurse and Craig Martin and Bajerny and Renard, Chad Richard, Patrick Cote, Louis Bedard. Oh, on and on. Wide Marco Cefalo, but he was only there for the 10 games. I had Marco on the show a little while back, and he was talking about a few stories and had some. And I just had Razanzoff on the show as well. So, no, I always I know the listeners always enjoy the crazy Quebec League stories. I mean, when you go over the rosters and you just talk about. Well, like you said, how it was basically it was encouraged, right? And it was the show and everything else. It's sort of, especially when you see hockey, because this was 02-03 when you were down there. I mean, you look at it and today's hockey, I mean, that just seems like a whole different world back then.
Well, I've told people before, I might even have said it on the first when we first talked, I think the average person that was considered themselves, you know, fairly tough or whatever, especially going out against Laval. I mean, you'd probably, if you did your homework and you were anywhere and you played pro hockey at anywhere before that and you were familiar with the guys that were there, you wouldn't be sleeping pretty very well before you came out on the ice against that team. I mean, I always tell people if they ever ask me, I mean, that's literally had to be the toughest team on the planet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. And there wasn't like you said, I mean, back, especially at the, like with the money that was getting paid to the tough guys and what was expected, yeah, you weren't rolling in there and saying, yeah, not tonight, fellas, not in the mood. Like, that wasn't happening.
Yeah, no. No, there was no, you had no choice. And I mean, I guess the good part about it was a 2-fight league instead of a 3-fight league because you could be out by, you know, later halfway through the first period if you, You might get the first one was going to be quick. You might be able to back guys off for a little while and say you want to play a little bit, but inevitably you're going to get in the second one at some point.
Yeah. Actually, as I was just kind of looking, before we get into your list here, I don't know if we talked about this in the first episode. I can't remember. I was just kind of scrolling the roster here. Maybe I did bring it up, but I'll ask you anyway, just in case we didn't. I know he's only there for the couple games, was Trevor Doyle. Do you remember Trevor?
I remember him, and somebody else asked me about that, but because I would go, I would probably go home every 5 weeks, being I had my wife stayed home and my kid was still at home, so I'd basically go in for 5 weeks at a time, and then probably go home for 4 or 5 days or whatever, or maybe a week. They'd fly me back, so I know he came in there actually at a time when I came home, and I don't know if he played too many games, but I know I don't think we overlapped where we actually played on at the same time, eh?
Okay, yeah, no, he just played 2 games and that was it. But yeah, I just saw his name there and I forgot to ask you about that. But so you actually didn't play the entire season. You would obviously miss games, like you said.
Yeah, well, I was suspended a couple. I think we played around 54 games or 50, something like that, and I ended up playing close to 40. But for probably about eight of those games, I came back just because I couldn't. I mean, my wife couldn't come out there at all, so for me, I had to come home, you know, probably at least 3 times during the season. So I think I missed probably 8 games or so on a weekend, just maybe 7-8 games by coming home. So I probably wouldn't have stayed married if I wouldn't have come home. So.
Yeah. Well, one last name before we get into your list that I have to ask you about, and I mean, I know I talked about it in the last interview with you, but he's such a polarizing figure, and you know, when you're talking about the Quebec League and the Laval team, of course, is Patrick Cote, you know, and if he's had his issues, and they're well-documented. We don't need to go into those here, but did you get along with Patrick, and what were your interactions like with him?
Well, he's so quiet. Like, that's the one thing I knew of him when I got there. And I mean, you expect when you hear Pat or whatever, Cote or whatever, you're thinking maybe he's going to be off the wall and, you know, in practice or whatever, you know, but do we hit each other or whatever, what's going to happen? He is not at all like that. He's quiet. Like, if you didn't say anything to him, he probably wouldn't say a word. And he kind of runs on his own time and his own clock or whatever. He's there and he gets on the ice and mean, he's got no emotion either way. Like, he just was kind of neat to watch because he is. I'm like, he's one of the toughest guys I've seen because he's just absolutely fearless and couldn't care less who you were or who thought you were. I mean, that's how he was. I mean, he's meeting him on the street. He's the nicest guy you'd ever meet. Dressing him, good guy.
Well, there we go. Like you said, and from all the guys I've had on the show, all the teammates say the same thing, pretty much the same as you. Yeah, pretty quiet dude and always got along with everybody. But then other guys, of course, that played against him, there's been a few that are like, oh, yeah, he's like the meanest bastard I ever played against, right? It was just like flip the switch, and when it was time to go, it was time to go, I guess.
Well, I think he's the scariest guy. I think I think he's one of the scariest because he's, I don't think he has any fear. He's not, he just watches NHL fights, and I mean, he seeks guys out, right? Like,
yeah.
You bump, and it doesn't matter if it's Probert or Twist or whoever, he'll fight you twice or three times a game. Like, it's not even, he doesn't care. And he's not a cheap shot guy. Like, he's not going to spear you or stick you. He just wants to fight. And to me, that's like, those guys don't come along too often where, like I said, you could probably beat the whatever out of him, and he's coming right back even again. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. Well, all right. We'll get right into it. The Dan Kopecks, five toughest opponents. And like you said, we'll start at five and work our way down. Who do you got for number five?
I got a guy I played against in the Central League that was honestly not the biggest guy, probably not the meanest guy, but he fought me every time we played. His name is Dwight Mullins. So I don't know if you know him, but he's played for quite a few years, and I think he played in WHL back when it was the Billings Bighorns, and I had to even look him up, but I bet you we fought four or five times that year. And honestly, he was, like I said, he's maybe 6 feet tall, about 220 pounds, and he may not even think he was going to win every fight he fought me, but he showed up every single night we played. And I think we at least fought four or five times, because we must have played each other like a dozen times. So I had him as number five. I have a ton of respect for that guy.
There you go. Yeah, it was just kind of, you hit me with that name. I wasn't expecting that one. He was in Fort Worth, right?
Yeah. He's, I'm not sure he ever left Texas area. I think he's still down there, because I know he was coaching. Well, he was coaching in the North American League, I think, and he's been in hockey ever since he was in Elmira, I think, coaching, and yep. I think he was even working for Dallas Stars, too. So, he's a good guy, honest guy. And, I mean, we fought before the National Anthem one night in Fort Worth. Like, that's the type of guy he was. He was just, he's a good, if he was on my team, it'd be awesome, because you know he's going to show up every night and play. I mean, I think he was probably 6 years older than me, too. So, it tells you.
Born in 67. Yeah, it's interesting, because he played the two games in the eye, and then like didn't play for like four seasons. Then all of a sudden he comes back and he's playing for Fort Worth for a couple years. Yeah, put up some decent numbers too.
Yeah, no, he was a good player. Like, he wasn't a guy that just came over the boards just to fight. I mean, he was a big part of their team. He might have been the captain. I'm not sure, close to it, but he knew, like, I mean, I guess Melnichuk was with me at the time too, and we had a tough team in Wichita when we were probably easily the toughest team in the Central League, and they knew that when they played us that they just couldn't get they weren't going to get away from it. So, but I mean, he showed up every time we played, and I'm like, this guy keeps coming at me. So I have him on my list.
You mentioned you fought him before the, well, how did you guys end up fighting before the Anthem?
Oh, that happened in Fort Worth. We were playing in downtown in the big arena, I remember, there's times back in the then, I mean, maybe it's not so much now, but when you get off the ice, like when you go off the ice, the visiting team has to cross through the home team's end for warm up to go off the ice. And so when we were going through the, I remember I was off the ice, Malnichuk was off the ice, everybody's in the room, but all of a sudden, Brad Wells is coaching us, and he comes in the room and he's just going bananas. Like, I think he was, half in the bag and half crying and whatever, and he's like, you can't believe this. They shot a puck at our goalie going off the ice cause, and hit him in the back of the leg, you know, and they were laughing about it or whatever, eh? So, okay, yeah, whatever. I mean, everybody's off the ice. They go out, do their ice, come back on. He's like, I think, so we get back on the ice. I'm going skating around, and they put out the red carpet for the lady to come out and sing, I remember. And I get on the bench, and I'm sitting there. I don't even have my helmet, my gloves on, and all of a sudden, I look over, and the backup goalie must have done something to their player when they were coming. The guy that got hit with the puck did something to their bench when he was. We were going to the benches, and the benches are side by side. And all of a sudden, hell breaks loose, whatever, and Wells is going bananas, whatever, and I'm like, and the lady's on the ice to sing or whatever, and I'm like, everybody's starting to push and shove in between the benches, and I'm like, I don't have my helmet or my glove on. I just jump over the boards. I come around, and all of a sudden he's there or whatever, and I mean, it's just, it happens, whatever. We squared off right at center ice. Like, the lady's still out there. They're trying to get everybody. Me and him are fighting at center ice. The glass is knocked down between the benches. Like, I at one time, once the fight was over, I think I had their coaches tie and, like, pulling them over the boards, and Wells was in half in their bench. And, oh, it was, I think we started the game with, like, 9 players.
the good old days.
Yeah, well, it was. Yeah, I got kicked out. I mean, I think I got a long suspension because I came home after that because they were going on another road trip, and I think it was in, I actually had the article, it was in the Hockey News, that whole melee, a bunch of guys got suspended or whatever. Yeah, we ended up playing with like 9 guys. I think they had about the same, eh? And we ended up winning a game too, I remember. But I think I got 4 games for that.
Tremendous. Well, okay, number 4.
Oh, I went back to the Central League again. Probably a guy you probably know of, and he was almost the same type of player, but a good player, and I had Jason Rushton.
There you go. So
we fought 4 times, maybe fought every game we fought. It seemed like every night we fought. I mean, he wasn't as big probably as he was when he later on, like I think he got pretty big or whatever, but he was a good player too, and he'd show up in Tulsa, and we'd fight every night. So, and he's a good fighter, like a really good fighter. So, not a guy you'd maybe want to. You wouldn't. You might look at him, you'd take him lightly if you didn't know him. He'd knock you out.
No, absolutely, and and like you said, good player. Like that year in Tulsa, you know, 64 games. He's got 37 goals in like 340 minutes. So, I mean, like you know, like shit's happening every time that guy's coming over the boards.
Yeah, like, and he had. You know, they had a decently tough team too, but I mean, they knew they had to show up and play Wichita. Like, I mean, it was just, maybe it was Wichita, I don't know, but yeah, like you said, he's got over 300 and some minutes of penalties. They're not all misconducts, you know, like, so he played pretty tough all year.
Yeah, did you ever notice, like, when you played guys, like, they always called them homers or whatever, like, guys that would play tougher at home than they did on the road? Did you ever find a few guys that did that?
Yeah, I might, a couple, especially in that league, some more so because you noticed it because you played everybody so many times.
Yeah, yeah.
There's maybe a guy or two in that league, I'd say, that would do that. Yeah, he wasn't one of them. I mean, we fought in I think he fought me probably most of the time in Wichita.
Yeah.
You might say the same about me, I don't know. But yeah, usually most of my fights are on the road, so. But yeah, I think we probably fought out of 4 or 5 times. I mean, once in Tulsa and probably the rest are in Wichita. But I think we fought twice the first night we ever played against each other.
Yeah, and I think he's a lefty too, isn't he? If I remember right.
He's a lefty, yeah.
Yeah, how did that...
Well, that's why you got to watch him, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he was pretty... Last time I seen him on YouTube or something, he's pretty... I think he was in Quebec. He's pretty stocky. Like, he was wide, but back then, he's, like, really slim, like, pretty wiry, and good player. Like I said, he could skate, he could score, but he's a lefty, and he's pretty shifty. Like, you got to watch him, because he'll sneak it in or whatever, right? So...
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah, and like you said, yeah, and I mean, yeah, he played a long time, and of course, you know, towards the end, I mean, he bounced around, but yeah, he played, like, you know, last, what was it, 5 or 6 years there in the Quebec League, but I'm trying to look, he showed up a year after you were there, but yeah, he did it for a long time, and definitely a tough dude, and yeah, Mayrad was saying the same thing about him, yeah, because they had that battle in that Enforcers tournament, right, in that... pay-per-view hockey.
That trade he was in that too. Yeah.
And Mayrad, him and Rushton had that really good semifinal fight, and I think Dean was saying, for whatever reason, he doesn't know why, but Rushton switched and went back to rights. And he goes, if he had stuck with his left hand, he goes, he probably would have beat me. But, yeah, it was, I believe that's what he was talking about. But yeah, Rush was a bad dude, man.
Yep.
But, all right, well, number three.
Well, I went back to the coast this one. I fought him maybe once, maybe twice. His name is Ron Magic. I don't know if you know who he is, but, yeah, he's a... wasn't around a long time, but he played for Brough in Hampton Roads, eh? So Brough had him always wired up every time we played Raleigh. And I think we fought twice, and I'm pretty sure I have one of them on video, but he is a big man and, like, strong and tough. Like, if you're going to go into a game and fight, you know with him you're going to have to beat. There's not too many times I felt like I'm overmatched with size or power, but he's a huge guy. We're just wide, too. So... But we fought in Hampton one time, and he was like all I could handle. And like, you don't want to get him. You don't want to get him at the end of a shift.
Yeah, well, and I mean, just, you know, looking at your hockey DB, I mean, they list you at 6'4", 220. Like, were you actually 6'4"?
Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe a little over it.
Yeah?
At that time, I was probably a little heavier at that time, too, when I was playing in Raleigh, because I trimmed down the older I got, but... He's at least 240. Like, I mean, he's 6'4", 240. He's just a beast of a guy.
So we go back to kind of like what you said with, like, Rushton, because, you know, Rushton's, you know, whatever, 5'10", 5'11". And then now you talk about Magic, who's the same, if not a little bigger than you. What did you prefer fighting? Guys your size or guys like Rushton's size?
Well, I'd prefer to fight guys that are my size.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, I fought guys like Bedard, and trying to think back to some of the small, like, guys that were not as big. Tasker, I didn't fight on the ice. I think was in more on the bench. But those guys are hard. For me, I found it a little bit harder to fight those guys that weren't, you know, 6 feet or whatever. They're harder to handle, I mean. But when you get a guy that's your size, I think it's just... For me, anyway, I prefer to fight a guy 6'3", 6'4", so...
Yeah. Well, as I don't know, as I'm thinking about it, and again, folks can probably go back to your long interview, and I'm sure we covered most of this stuff, but I was just thinking in terms of the fighting with the jerseys. Did you do anything with your jersey? Do you get, like, did you prefer tying it down? Do you prefer coming out of it? Did you do any tearaway sleeves or anything crazy?
I'm not sure if I ever tied down in my life. I'm not a guy to lose my jersey. But, yeah, well, in the Central League, I had my sweater altered. I mean, it was, like, dulled out, like, to come out of it. So, in the East Coast League, not really, because it wasn't a thing in the coast where you really... I don't know if they would let you get away with that. Was altering jerseys as much as it was in the Central League. But, like, for me, and I'm so right-hand dominant, too, that's the other thing. When you're fighting a guy like Magic or somebody that size, whatever, because I'm so strong, like, want to use the right all the time. I'm not confident with my left. If I go left with a guy like that, yeah, I could, might work out well, but you're also leaving his right free, too, so... And, you know, and not too many guys that fought that were overpowering me or whatever, but I just felt he was a guy that when he tied up my right, and I think any time a guy did good with me is when you could tie me up, lock up my right arm or whatever, now I'm really kind of off balance because I can't go to the left so much, right? So I'm going to be fighting to get my right through you. So with him and that, when they lock you up, you got, you're matching guys that are really strong. There's another guy I fought like that was super strong was Jared Bednar. You know, I could probably put him on this list too. Like, he's really upper body strong. Like, I fought him twice, and the first fight, I felt like I was like a, I would have been like I was fighting a, I was 10 years old fighting a 20 year old. Just physically strong at the end of my shift. And I mean, he just felt like he was overpowering me, everything I do. Second time we fought, I was fresh. I got smarter about it and was really twisting him up. And remember talking to a guy in South Carolina one time after he did a thing down there for fighting in the East Coast hockey, and he said that was probably the hardest fight he ever seen Bednar have. So
there we go. Yeah, throw it out. Well, and another name that you, yeah, you, well, you talked about Magic and Brophy getting them all wound up. Well, you of course played for the legendary John Brophy during your time in Wheeling. Pardon me. And I know I asked you obviously in the last interview because how could you not? But I know I'm throwing this at you out of the blue, but do you have any Brophy stories that you could share? And first of all, did you get along with him?
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Best coach. Honestly, best coach I ever had. So, I would have played for him. It was the one regret I had about going to Quebec is that I never came back to play for him again and go back to Wheeling, because I debated going back to Wheeling, and I decided I wasn't going to play that. Kind of wasn't sure I was going to play that year, and that Laval just kept hounding me, and they're throwing money around, whatever. I remember I got there and he called me and I said I was going back to Quebec. I was going to Quebec to play, and I remember him on the voice, and you shouldn't be playing there, you should be playing here. And I'll never forget it. Like, it bothered me all the whole season, and still even when I got finished that I never actually went back and played for him in Wheeling. Oh, I love the guy. I'd do anything for him. He's not what people think. I mean, they think he's sending guys out there to do all that. That is complete opposite of what he expects. You to know your job, and not once did he ever tell you to go out and fight. It's just you did it out of because you knew you had to do it, and you didn't want guys that were out there running around like idiots doing stupid shit. He was just, you know, if you fought in the last 10 minutes of a game that you were losing big time, you probably weren't going to play the next game. Because his philosophy was, if you're here and you made the mess, you better stay in it to finish it off. So you don't get an easy way out.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well,
you'd rather you fought 3 seconds into the game than last 3 seconds, right? Because you might as well fight when it matters. Because anybody can fight at the end of a game when it doesn't matter anymore. Right?
That's an interesting philosophy. That's true. Well, there we go.
When we went to Hampton Roads, all the fights that we played when he was coaching, like all our fights were like 1, 2, 3, like right off the face-offs. That's how he did it. So you knew when you went there, that's how it was going to be. Probably wasn't going to be a lot of stuff at the end of the game. If they were losing, and we used to beat the shit out of them, honestly, all the time, like win big time, by the time the third period rolled around, they were quiet. They weren't going to do anything because they knew that's just not how he played, right?
Well, like you said, that's interesting because, of course, you know, the perception and the the reputation is you know, the crazy old man that'll, you know, let's brawl and it doesn't matter and, you know, whatever. But so for you to say, you know, like at the end of the game, because you think that would be when he would do it, right? And, you know, out of his reputation that people think. But, yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah. I think Walsh told a story one time on Spit and Chicklets about the one with the coffee. Did you ever hear that one?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, like every time a guy kept coming in to the room, some kid or whatever, like they tell you how much time before the start of the game, there's a clock, but a kid kept coming in, like 10 minutes, guys, whatever, and he was talking or whatever, 5 minutes or whatever, and then down 2 minutes. Finally, he just kept, like, you could tell he was getting madder every time the kid came in there. I believe he threw the coffee at the kid he was holding when he came in the room. Yeah, that was a true story. I thought it was an usher, but Walsh said it was a kid. So
there you go. And you briefly mentioned about Tasker, and you said fighting him on the bench. What was that?
That was in Birmingham when I was playing for Augusta. He wasn't in Birmingham for like, I guess he just maybe got there. And then I was playing with a guy named Bob Berg, eh? So Berg, he knew who he was from the Colonial League. He's like, oh, Tasker's here. He says, so I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Whatever. Oh, just wait till you see him, whatever. But by the time we got on the ice, his mouth was going in the warm-up skate. In the morning, he was shooting pucks at us down by the glass, going around. And he was got in the game, and you could tell he didn't get a lot of ice time, but I was in front of the bench, whatever, and he grabbed me. I had long hair, right? And he grabs me by the back of the hair, and he said something to me, and I just turned around and actually just blasted him, like, right back into the bench, whatever. I think I got it, that one, on video somewhere, too. And it just turned into a whole melee. Everybody was in there. Thompson was there. We were fighting in the benches and everything. Everybody got kicked out. So, and we were supposed to play Birmingham, I think, like 3 weeks later back in Augusta, and the league stepped in and suspended all of us only for the game that we were going to play each other. They wouldn't let... So I was like, can't wait to get back to Augusta so we're going to get this guy or whatever, eh? And sure enough, they stepped in, like, and suspended. I think they had, like, Pinfold and Pop and all those guys who were playing on Birmingham. So they had a pretty tough team, too, and got to Augusta and nobody could play. Everybody was suspended. we ended up playing together and being good friends after playing Wheeling, so.
Yeah, well, there you go. So was that, Matt, what would we say? That was number three. So number two.
Two, I had Eric Bolton.
Well, everybody knows Eric Bolton, yeah.
Yeah, we fought in way back in the coast. I think when he was still in Charlotte.
Yeah.
My teeth got a little bit shook around what time we were fighting with him, because I didn't wear a mouth guard at that time. And he clipped me one time up in that fight. And I actually had to go in and get all my teeth, like, fixed after that. He was a strong kid, man. Yeah, you better fight him. You better be ready.
Wow.
I don't think I had any idea who he was when we fought. Like, when I got there, I wasn't really sure who he was, because he doesn't look like a guy that you would be kind of, you know, puts up penalty minute numbers, but you didn't really know him. He's not a guy running around putting on a show or anything, eh? But when you fought with him, man, you better be ready, because he's a good player.
Well, and I mean, and that's the thing, right? I mean, we're talking at that point, even throughout your career, it's like we're talking about the 90s and the early 2000s, so there's no YouTube or anything. So it's not like you can, like, get the heads up on these guys. As much as you can, were you a video guy? Like, did you ever watch video on anybody?
No. All you had was game notes, eh?
Yeah.
That's right. So you had the hockey news, eh? Like,
yep.
You'd look at the stats or whatever, they'd come out and... Well, who's this guy? He has like 350 minutes or 400 minutes. Well, you know he's a fighter or whatever, but you don't know what he's like. And then he comes on the ice, and Bolt's not a big guy. Like, he's only probably 6'1", eh? But he's really stocky or whatever. But he's a good fighter. I mean, he watches NHL fights. There isn't too many where he's not in. He's in every one of them.
Oh, yeah. Like, that guy's career was amazing. I mean, and he was around forever and fought everybody. And, yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, Eric Bolton. Yeah, for sure. That doesn't need any explanation. But that's interesting that you didn't wear a mouth guard. Maybe after that.
After that is when I started wearing a mouth guard. Yeah, I clipped. I think I got 8 teeth fixed after that fight. We fought. It wasn't a bad fight. Back and forth, whatever. Come on. I might have been at the end of the period, and I was going off the ice, and I'm like, son of a bitch, something's wrong with my... I keep spitting all these chunks out of my mouth or whatever, and I'm like, I wasn't even sure what it was. I get back to the room, and I don't know if someone said, look at your teeth, man, or whatever, and all 4 of my front teeth and all 4 of my bottom teeth were sawed right off, like, took the tops and the bottom part of each of those teeth right off. I had to go into the dentist that night and get one of them fixed, because I needed a root canal.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh,
the mouth guard after that.
Yeah. Did you have, and it's interesting, well, just completely random, but how did you like fighting with a mouth guard? Did that kind of mess you up at first? Like, breathing-wise or anything?
No. No, after I got it in there, I don't think I could play without it. They fit so good. Eh,
yeah.
For me. Like,
that's true.
Yeah, no, it almost becomes like a... soother, right? You almost got to have it in there. No. Visor? No, I don't want no visor, that's for sure. That didn't bother me at all, but it couldn't be without my mouth guard.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, here we go. The number one.
Well, number one, just because it was probably by the sheer number of fights that we had, and we had some pretty good ones, was Joel Theriault in fought in the coast, I think, and we fought in Quebec a few times. There's probably at least four fights for sure I can remember with that. So I put him at number one, and I got respect for the guy. I mean, he did it for years and showed up every night, and every fight you had with him, you know, he's another lefty too, right? So
yep.
You got your hands full with him. I mean, I think if we were asking him, he'd probably say I was probably one of the guys that might give him the most trouble when we fought. So, you know, I got him at number one.
Well, there you go. You can't go wrong with that. And for those listening, if you want to go to my YouTube channel, Fourth Line Voice on YouTube, I have a few Dan Kopeck, Joel Terrio fights on there, and you do quite well against them. When you fought him in the coast and then you fought him later on in the Quebec League, had he changed at all? Like, were you surprised?
Yeah, well, in the coast, he was in Hampton Roads, I think, and
yeah,
he was just coming out of junior, but someone told me this kid had all these... That was, you know, you don't, like you said, you don't know who anybody is, especially coming out of junior, so it's not like I played against them in pro anywhere. And they said, well, this kid has all these penalty minutes, and he knocked out this guy in Washington camp. And I'm like, so, and honestly, I don't want to be disrespectful, but when we first got into Hampton, I'm like, this guy? Like, really? I mean, he was not very, I mean, he wasn't filled out. He was just a kid, eh? So he's only proud to be only 21, so... We fought in Hampton, and I mean, he did okay with me, but I mean, nothing that you were gonna, nah, this guy isn't what he thinks, they think he is, but give him time, whatever. But then we ended up running into each other back again, and I think I might have played against him even again in the coast after that, crossed paths somewhere, but I don't remember fighting him again until we got into Quebec. Well, obviously, the kid's grown up, and he's a big, big man, you know, so, and, the first fight we were going to have, I think, there, I don't know if it's even, might be on video, but that was going to be probably the best fight we had, but I ended up losing my balance and stumbling backwards, but that was another fight where I had him off the start again, but I think it just carried on after that, and I think we ended up fighting a couple more times after that, but he was just one of those guys, and every time we played, usually him and I were going to fight. I mean, that was just kind of was already on the card, right? So
yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And like you said, he did it for so long and I think and you know, and again, like you said, I think you know, everybody sees the, you know, the Quebec version of him, and later on especially, and but back, you know, like in the coast and stuff, and even in junior, he was a pretty solid player, like as a defenseman, he wasn't a bad player.
No, like, I think he was not even, he might have been playing, I'm trying to remember now, he might have been playing forward back in the coast when he came down there, and just because we were lined up against each other on a face-off, so he obviously wasn't playing D, I think it was on the wall, and I think I started it with him just because I knew who he was, and he had all these, figured, you know what, it's just the way it goes, but he didn't do too bad, and I mean, it wasn't like, I don't think we ever fought again after that. I said, I think we played again, maybe played against each other. Not sure if he was in Jacksonville.
Yeah, he was in Jacksonville for a few years.
Ran across each other, but we never really, we didn't really look for it or anything like that. So, but back, once we got to Quebec League, and I mean, he wasn't, and he was, you know, I don't think he was quite like how he finished, how he was even at the Quebec League, because he had just kind of started there too. So, you know, he's a, He got better and better the older he got too. So,
oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, like you said, that's a great hell of a list. You had a few fights there when the anthem's on, you're fighting in the bench and yeah, and all this. But you know, back in the day when you're kind of like, you know, you're in warm ups and you're cruising around, who was a guy that was like a big guy? You know, he was always cruising center ice, always yapping. I mean, I guess Tasker for one, but was there anybody else that was just like, look at this donkey?
Well, I was a guy that probably always kind of stayed close to the red line, but that's just where I spent most of my warm-up. I wasn't really one of those guys that was kind of... Well, I know one guy that stuff always started in the... for carried over from the warm-up was Pizziak. That was one guy, because his mouth always was going in the warm-up. I can at least remember once in the coast for sure where something started. It said something to me. And wind in Quebec too, because I know there was a fight in Quebec that was from the warm up. So, and it was, I think it started out with him and Martin, Craig Martin, and then I ended up getting into it, and that was a pretty good. Mighty, I think that was on a video I got there that you might have sent me, and I was watching that, and I was always been looking for that warm up.
Yeah,
and we found it on there, and over Zanzov too. If he was interested in that fight too, because we were all involved in that one, eh? But how it started was pretty good, because it took a long time to get going, eh? It was in the warm up, he had said something, and Martin stopped in the warm up, and it was back and forth for probably about 2 or 3 minutes before all hell broke loose. So, but no one's really thinking that far ahead and has their camera back then or camcorder going, because you know in Quebec you should have it going all the time. So,
yeah. Well, Kiziak, that was because I mean I'm not sure if you listened to the Razanzov interview, but yeah, Jesse's not a big fan of
no,
you know, and
you kind of let it go. I mean, by it's we're all old guys now, and it doesn't, you know, it's all whatever. Who cares? It's done with whatever. But so there isn't too many guys that you probably dislike, especially off the ice. Most of these guys are just doing their job. It's just, you know, it is what it is. And you'd see them today, you'd probably run into them and laugh about everything, or have a, you know, have a beer or whatever. But there might be a couple guys that I don't think so. he might be on my list too. So
yeah, I might be on the no drink list.
Whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean. So it's like I run across guys on social media that have, hey, how's it going or whatever. But yeah, it's yeah, he's a guy that might rub you a little bit the wrong way.
Well, I mean, everyone has that, right? There's always a few guys. Well, before I get out, well, speaking of maybe not Mo, but intense individuals, and I know you played with them, obviously, and I just want to get, and again, we would have talked about this in your other interview, but just for the new listeners here for while we're sitting here, the meat grinder, Marty Melnichuk. You got any stories about Marty?
Oh, Marty. You know, like, he's a good friend of mine. I mean, that's, I want to see him again, and I haven't seen him. I saw him once since we played, and I don't know. It was just his stories with Marty are not even as much on the ice as the fun we used to have off the ice. Like, it was just everything was, because we lived right beside each other in the same building, and he was kind of like a little brother to me. So we'd always go to the rink together. We hung out together, but he's. I think the time he tried to stomp Pizziak in San Antonio one time with his skates, it was just like, I was in the penalty box and all hell broke loose on the ice in San Antonio. And I swear to God, it was like one of those ones where he's on the ice and I was going to come out of the penalty box and fight. And I can't remember who was ref, but he just kept pointing at me like, get back in there. I had one leg over the board, skate over, and Pizziak's right in front of the door or whatever. Laying on the ice, and Melnichuk tried to stomp on his skate, and I think Pizziak rolled over to try to, and he missed him or whatever. Hey, eh? That's Marty, man. Like, what you got him going? Oh, and that guy got Marty going too. Like, it wasn't the first time. I think every time we played him, it was just like it turned into a shit show. Eh? So that's Marty, man.
Well, he's still good guy. That dude's still living the life, man. What is he running the bar out there in Edmonton? And yeah, he looks like he's partying all the time.
Yeah, I heard he manages those kind of like a, yeah, for concerts or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Music and everything they have in the bar, yeah. He's the one guy I like to run into again when I go to Edmonton. I'm going to try to track him back down. But yeah, we used to have some good times off the ice, riding in his Jeep in the snowstorm back and forth. We lived like 5 miles from the rink, and he had his Jeep with no rag top on it, with full of holes and everything, and coming back from road trip and getting into Wichita at like 3 and 4 in the morning, and we have like a foot of snow in the Jeep, and we're wrapped up in blankets driving down the interstate, yes, coming back home. So it was always fun with him.
Yeah, the meat grinder. Why, I was trying to get him on the show, and he said, well, I'll do your show, but it's got to be live and at the bar here in Edmonton. I was like, oh, all right, well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I was like, okay, well, I said, well, what, once they, maybe when they lift the pandemic here and we, you know, we can get back to normal, maybe in the fall, maybe I'll be doing a live interview with the meat grinder from his bar there in Edmonton. But, he's definitely a legend for sure. Yeah, that's a guy I always say that I was very surprised that actually never ended up in the Quebec League. Like, you talk about a dude that's tailor-made for that league, it would have been him.
Yeah. He liked fighting, and it mattered to him. Like, especially, like, he couldn't lose. If he lost, it would just, like, I mean, God help the guy the next time they were going to play each other, because he would chase them around the rink or whatever. Hey, but, on, and he's a guy, honestly, if we played against each other, they... I considered him such a good friend, and I mean, there's no way I'd fight with that guy, just out of respect and being friends or whatever. I mean, I know guys say, oh, it's just part of, oh, game, we go fight. No way. I have too much, considered him, like I said, like a brother, and there's no way I would ever drop the gloves on him and fight him. There's too many other guys to scrap, but I definitely like playing with him, because he always made me laugh, and there was always something going on with him, especially in the warm-up. He's a guy in the warm-up, too. He skates around. He likes to get it going. He always had his helmet off or whatever, and his hair was, like, hanging over his eyes. And he wasn't a very big guy then, too, when we played. He was, you know, he got pretty big once he got older. Like, you know, he was hitting the weights and stuff. But then he was barely 200 pounds when we played in Wichita. So.
Yeah. And then you see, like, yeah, when in Arkansas and stuff, yeah, he got to... But yeah, with the long hair there and everything, and yeah, like I said, just a showman, right? Like I said, oh, he could have made a pile of money in Quebec. They would have loved him down there, or up there, I guess. But yeah, that would have been something to see the meat grinder in Quebec. But well, there we go. That's the five toughest opponents for Dan Kopech. That was a hell of a list, man. And like I said, I told you tonight I wouldn't keep you for too long. I appreciate it on short notice that you came on here and you told some great stories. And like I said, for everyone listening, please go back and check out Dan's full-length interview, because there's a ton more stories. And I know you told some really good ones then, too. But I really appreciate you doing this again.
Yeah, no, it's like second time around's probably better time, because once you've done them, one with a podcast, with, you know, the first time you're not really too sure what to expect, but... After you get off and you start thinking, well, I remember this and I remember that, and I should have said this. So it's nice to get another chance. So maybe another time down the road we can
shoot
the shit again.
Well, I mean, I could guarantee you probably have a million stories that haven't been told. But well, yeah, that's the thing with the podcast, right? It's like always like the job interview. Your best answers are on the drive home. You know, it never fails, right?
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I was going to say before I get you off the air, I'm going to put.
About how we ended up rooming together next time, and after we had scrapped in Birmingham or whatever and hadn't seen him again, all of a sudden they told me he was my roommate in Wilkes-Barre's camp, so some other time.
Wow, okay. Well, yeah, we'll save that one, because I'll definitely have you back on. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here while we're recording, but you've mentioned you might have that on video. How much video do you have? I didn't even know you had video.
Oh, I've got probably 2 hours of fights that I've got from mostly East Coast League fights. Brian Wells used to smash all the game tapes in Wichita, so we'd end up losing everything, you know. Like, cause, I don't know, he'd go out of control after every game and end up in a pile of plastic out and behind the bus all the time. So I used to spray everything, but I tried keeping everything from Raleigh and Augusta. I have a good chunk of the fights from that time too. I got to get them off of an old 8mm tape and get them onto DVD. I got to find.
Oh yeah, so we need. Okay, well, I'll look into that for you. We'll figure something out, because we got to see this stuff.
Yeah. If you start losing the quality, so long, like after they sit for so long, like, and then I edited them all, like I took all the fights out of it and got rid of all the dead time and put it all together on one 8mm tape or whatever, so they're on there. I just got to hook it up to a TV and get a DVD recorder hooked up to find somebody that can do it, eh? So.
Absolutely. Yeah, we got to get that. So the world needs to see some Dan Kopeck tilts, because I've seen a few and they're damn good. So, yeah, we need to get those out there. But,
yeah.
For sure. Well, all right, Matt, I won't keep you any longer, but thank you very much for coming on and doing this again. And this certainly, again, will not be the last time I have you on. But anyway, I'll let you go. Thank you, Dan, very much.
No problem. Happy to do it.
Excellent. Thanks, man.
All right.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?